everybody, and welcome to Nintendo Week for the end of week of E3 through June 22nd. I'm your host, Colin McIsaac, and as always, I'm joined by Alex Plant.
I might actually catch fire today during the recording, so be careful.
And Ben Lamoureux.
Still in my post-E3 coma.
We are forgoing the traditional format for this week's episode as we cool down from that E3 mayhem. And what we're doing instead is we're going to have a long news block segment on the specific subjects that have come out in the past 2 weeks or so that we didn't have the proper time to address in last week's episode. So some of these stories are more recent than that. They're newer from the last week. And others you may have heard of already. But for one reason or another, we think it's important that you hear it again. For some of them, we have perspective to share. Others may have been buried by the flood of E3 news. But either way, we thought it was important to arrange what we think are the biggest recent stories that haven't yet been discussed on the show and cover them the Nintendo Week way. Before we start, I do want to make this clear. Normally between the news block and the lightning round, we try to make sure we get most, if not all, of a given week's actual news into the show. But this week, we're still cooling down from the insane flurry of information that is E3, and more news is still coming as we speak. So we cannot promise you that we'll successfully cover everything that's important to us, and we definitely can't promise that we'll cover everything that's important to you. So if you haven't already been keeping up with the E3 news every day, be sure to catch yourself up at gamnesia.com. That's GAMNESIA. We've got daily rundowns of news up in the feature bar. We've got all the stories in the main news feed. You can search stories. You can browse by category, by tag. Whatever works best for you, as long as you make sure that you don't let any news slip under your nose. Next week, we should be back to normal, but in the meantime, now is a great opportunity to start reading the site daily if you haven't already. There's a great community in the comments. You can log in and write your own user journals, guest contributions to the site. We work even harder there than we do here on the show, so we really hope you enjoy using it. So I've been talking for a while now, and the first story on our list is another long chunk for me. So before we move on, do either of you guys have anything you want to say?
I have been, like, pretty video gamed out for the last week, so
yeah.
I'm glad we're not doing a game corner.
Yeah. I've found a little less motivation to be playing all those bazillions of games that I've played too, so. Well, with that said, let's hit the news block. Zelda Breath of the Wild does not feature a female playable character, no Linkle, no gender option for Link, just Link, and he's a male. Onuma said that the team discussed the possibility, but ultimately they decided if they're gonna have a female character, it's simpler for her to be Zelda. That said, Onuma specifically designed Link to be androgynous in Breath of the Wild, so that both men and women can relate to him. All the rumors from the past few years about female Link, he says, probably indicate that they did a good job on that front. From my perspective, I think that this whole female Link discussion is something that sort of slid under the table when everyone saw how incredible Breath of the Wild is, which I think says a lot about what happens to a community when unifying things like the sheer awe of a new game gets tucked away for so long. But for Breath of the Wild in particular, it seems to me very much like certain story elements rely on Link being a character from a previous moment in Hyrule's history, whether that's a game that we've already played or just something that they'll explore in Breath of the Wild or maybe even in a future game. It seems to me like that is an important factor. So even though I think it's unfortunate that there's no gender option or anything like that, I completely respect those creative decisions, and I'm going to reserve my judgment until we actually know more about the game. That said, though, Aonuma's explanation is really weak, and I have a hunch that that is because they just don't want to reveal too much about those story elements, but I can totally see why the people who want some kind of gender option are not satisfied with this answer that we just, well, it would be Zelda, wouldn't it? You know, and I think they could have easily solved that by just saying, look, Link may be an avatar in some games, he may have been an avatar in the older days, but in this particular game, he is a character. His name is Link. You can't change that. He's male. You can't change that. This is the story we wanted to create, but maybe one day we'll make something else.
Yeah, for me, it's one of those things where you can't really knock the execution because the way that they've established the image of Link up to this point, it's true that tons of people have connected with that, both male and female. So there's nothing really wrong with the character they're using mm-hmm. and the depiction they're using. It's just, with all these breaking conventions that they've been saying that they're going to be doing with this game, it's kind of disappointing to see that this, of all things, was one that they kept, and to look at their reasons, of one of which was, you know, the Triforce requires Link to be a male, I mean, that's how it sounds.
Well, yeah, that part was a little skimpy. It didn't really seem like there was a full translation of what he was saying as far as the Triforce goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, that one was really weird.
It just doesn't seem like they really had a good reason.
Mm-hmm.
And you might be right. The story might bear out that there's a good reason. Like, one kind of theory I've seen swirling around is that this Link is actually, like, the dead Link from the Downfall timeline that leads to a Link to the Past.
Yeah, which I think is super cool. I love that idea.
Yeah, and that wouldn't really work because Ocarina of Time Link doesn't have a female option.
Right.
But if that's not the story thread, then, you know, anything goes. So...
Sure,
I find their explanation that the story can't allow it to be kind of weird. As for the suggestion that if there's a female playable character, it should be Zelda, I'm not sure I agree. And the reason why I'm not sure I agree is because while Zelda's a cool character and she's fun to play, like in Hyrule Warriors and in Smash Bros., for example, I think that one convention that they should keep is the kind of gameplay that we get when we play as Link. And I think if they were to make Zelda a playable character, it would either cheapen the character of Zelda to make her play like Link, or it would not be really an authentic Zelda game if it were the Star Wars Zelda. You know what I mean?
Right. So I don't know that that's... The language made it sound like they were talking about, you know, if they were to have Zelda as a playable character, it would be like in a spin-off game, because Aonuma was saying, well, then what would Link do? But I could also be misinterpreting that.
Yeah, it sounds that way to me too, and I just don't see that as a satisfying answer.
Sure, yeah, and I can understand that. Next up, Nintendo has also considered making a Zelda spin-off starring Sheik, which is something that I've wanted to see for a long time. I know many of others have had the idea as well. In an interview with Game Rant, Miyamoto himself said the dev team has discussed how it might be cool to have Sheik as the protagonist, and he specifically said it's not an impossibility. Same goes for a Princess Zelda spin-off game, but it sounds like Sheik is who they've really seriously been considering.
Yeah, and you know, we've actually heard this Sheik rumor before, I believe with ties to possibly Retro Studios.
I heard something about that
surface a few years ago. But I think this might be the first time that someone sort of high up at Nintendo has actually commented on it and confirmed that at least the idea was being tossed around.
Yeah, and that's super exciting for me because, you know, a sort of, like, action stealth kind of game with Sheik. I would love to explore what Sheik is doing in the 7 years that Link is away. Maybe sort of see her grow up from like young Princess Zelda to the older Princess Zelda that we see in Ocarina of Time. That would be really, really cool to explore a Hyrule without Link. And I don't know, I think there's so much story potential that's untapped there. And I think there is a lot of really interesting gameplay, stealth-wise, combat-wise, that they could make out of a character like Sheik.
Well, and this would also be a great time to do it because Breath of the Wild clearly is centered around Sheikah culture and Sheikah lore and things like that. So to go from that to then introduce a spin-off game that digs even further into it would be outstanding. And we've already seen with Hyrule Warriors that you can spin off a Zelda game into, you know, a new style and add some new characters and people will eat it right up.
Totally.
So also in Miyamoto's answer here, in discussing the possibility of Zelda getting her own spin-off game, he says something that sort of contradicts what Aonuma had said earlier. Because like Alex said, Aonuma, he said, you know, if we're going to do a game with a female protagonist, it has to be Zelda. Whereas Miyamoto said in a later interview, in the classic games in the series, meaning the like main series games as opposed to spin-offs, in the classic games in the series, Link is the hero, and that will not change.
Yeah.
So I kind of imagine there's a disconnect here just because Miyamoto hasn't been as hands-on with the series over the past couple years. So maybe Aonuma is open to the idea of a Zelda spin-off, but that's not actually something that's been discussed in an official capacity, and Shigeru Miyamoto didn't get that memo that there was interest in that.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that they're even considering full-fledged Zelda spinoffs is really encouraging because
totally.
They've had such a hard time settling on a gameplay style that they think is that they're really confident in and that they think will be a good framework for the future. And it feels like with Breath of the Wild, they've achieved that. But at the same time, there are lots of other sort of Zelda traditions that they're discarding to make Breath of the Wild happen. And I wonder if some of those might be picked up in Zelda spinoffs.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I mean, I wonder if maybe there could be a game starring Zelda that plays a little bit more traditionally like the older Zelda games where you've got sort of, you know, you cut grass and you get hearts and rupees and stuff. You've got, you know, a more linear sort of dungeon structure.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that could be interesting.
I think you guys are missing the real potential here. AAA tingle game.
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
I was thinking Gruus, but you know what? I would settle for that.
Yeah, and that'll be another game in the Wind Waker style.
Yeah, you know, I mean, hey.
Gotta keep the styles going.
Yeah, that actually could be a really interesting way that they could sort of delineate each of the different styles of games and just sort of let, for example, I don't know if this is an actual suggestion I might have, but for example, let Tingle sort of inherit the cel-shaded Wind Waker art style for future games. Let Zelda inherit the sort of maybe, you know, Ocarina of Time or Twilight Princess sort of aesthetic. That could be really neat.
Yeah, I think spinoffs are definitely an appropriate mechanism for that. The series is just so schizophrenic that it seems like that's the best way to mediate all these different styles.
Miyamoto also said that Nintendo is trying to create a new kind of Mario for NX, probably indicating that the next mainline Mario game won't be a follow-up to Galaxy, 3D World, or even the 2D platformers. Although it's certainly possible that we see games like that before whatever this new project is finished. Either way, he says that we'll probably see this new game in about a year or two, and he adds that maybe at next year's E3 we'll be able to share something.
So Nintendo will actually have an E3 presence in next year.
Well, maybe,
he said maybe.
Maybe they'll be able to share something.
Maybe we'll have a game.
I think the most revealing thing for me here is that that means they won't have their sort of big new Mario game at NX launch or in the NX launch window.
At least not the revolutionary one. You know, maybe they are working on Galaxy 3 on the side, and this is something that they're working on for the future of Mario, but then they want something like that to launch the NX with.
That's possible. I kind of hope that's not true.
Yeah, me too, a little bit.
They don't throw too many Marios at the wall in the first year, you know?
Yeah, agreed.
But yeah, E3 is definitely after March 2017, so.
It's also really interesting to me that if they're not planning to roll out a Mario at launch for NX or near launch for the NX, that's kind of encouraging about the rest of their franchises. I mean, we know that we've heard rumors that they're porting like Smash Bros. And Splatoon and Zelda and, well, we know about Zelda, and Mario Maker. But it also gives me a lot of hope for other kinds of games like whatever Retro Studios project is, like Pikmin 4, because we know that a lot of the time they kind of put all their eggs in the Mario basket or the Zelda basket, and these other kinds of games sort of pad out the roster, but I would love to see them for once make a roster that really puts a breadth of games front and center rather than putting one or two front and center and having a bunch on the side. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Sort of as a periphery point to that, it's also nice that they're not just rushing out Mario, like, period, regardless of all the other games, because it seems like it's been a long time since they didn't try to rush out a Mario game.
Well, and especially after Wii U launched with New Super Mario Bros. U, and
and then 3D World the next year.
Yeah, 3D World, but in particular Mario U, when the higher-ups at Nintendo basically heard the very lukewarm reaction to that game and said, what's wrong with you guys? You wanted a Mario game at launch. We're giving you one. What's the problem? And that made it clear that they really were not listening. People didn't want, you know, another new Super Mario game at launch. They wanted the kind of game like Mario 64, Mario Galaxy, that blew people's expectations away. Whereas New Super Mario Bros. Really was not very inspired at all.
Sure.
So it's good that they're kind of listening a little more.
I have a hard time believing that they really cared that much about their 2D Mario games that they produced in the last few years anyway, because clearly they had this period where they wanted to move on from them anyway to 3D games. We've clearly seen with the most recent 3D games that they're really trying to convert people from 2D Mario to 3D Mario.
Yeah.
And it seems like the 2D Marios they've been putting out have just been token Mario games and not things that they're really proud of.
Sure.
So I kind of hope that this new kind of Mario is a 2D Mario and that they're really being thoughtful about where to take that franchise, which is, you know, that's the birthplace of Mario, at least Super Mario.
Sure. Yeah, I could see that. But at the same time, I would much rather have a 3D Mario.
Sure.
It's been a while since we've had, I mean, I know that stuff like Yooka-Laylee is like reviving 3D platformers and stuff, but I really love Mario 64. I love Mario Galaxy. I love Sunshine. And I'd like to see them take the formula back to a style where you've got, you know, a set number of worlds that you keep exploring, keep doing different tasks within, rather than just a series of one-off stages.
Sure.
During E3, there's been a lot of talk about the NX itself, naturally. Perhaps the biggest of which is from Reggie himself, who says that Sony and Microsoft can battle it out in the red ocean over specs and horsepower, but Nintendo's main drive is to create the best entertainment content they can, focused on making people smile. The CEO of GameStop confirmed that the NX will have some kind of physical media. It won't be a digital-only console. But developers have said a lot about the NX recently as well. Take-Two, the publisher behind GTA and tons of other big franchises, says they are very interested in it, and they're watching closely what Nintendo does next. Which, on the one hand, is encouraging, but on the other, it does sound like they haven't really been convinced by it yet.
Or, you know, maybe they don't even have a dev kit yet if they're just still
eyeing the situation. Oh, that's definitely what I was thinking.
And, you know, we're only like 9 months away from when the console launches, so it doesn't sound like they'll have anything in the launch window for
right.
it.
Right.
Yeah, so, I feel the same way. It feels like maybe Nintendo hasn't been that open about NX with all the Western studios.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. But meanwhile, the communications director of CD Projekt Red, who's apparently a big fan of Nintendo, says that he's personally convinced the system will be fantastic and that developers seem excited about it. But most interesting of all comes from one of the higher-ups at Ubisoft, who says that NX addresses the family market in a very different way, and they believe that it will recapture a lot of lapsed Wii players. So there's a lot to digest here. Do either of you guys have a place that you want to start?
I'm not really sure how Nintendo intends to recapture that sort of family market when, you know, they can just play on a tablet or a smartphone and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But it's encouraging to see Ubisoft say something so positive about Nintendo, because they have had just no love for Nintendo's hardware for a few years now. So whatever it is that, you know, NX's hook is, you know, Nintendo keeps pitching it as a completely new concept. Whatever it is, it's got Ubisoft at least a little bit excited.
Yeah. So part of me is starting to think that Nintendo is starting to join the rest of the industry in seeing themselves as a non-competitor to Sony and Microsoft. And they've kind of disregarded what the other companies do for a long time now, but back then they could afford to. Wii was blowing the other guys out of the water, DS was on absolute fire. They didn't see it as competition back then because they were so far ahead of everyone else, but now they're in the opposite direction. And the reason it's not a competition is because Wii U can't even hope to compete. And Ubisoft and Take-Two and all these other companies, they've seen Nintendo, I think, as this weird sort of cousin to Sony and Microsoft pretty much since the GameCube or even earlier. Whether it's due to low sales or underpowered hardware or whatever problem an individual console has had, there's been something holding developers back from making games on Nintendo platforms basically since the N64. And gamers, meanwhile, I know a lot of Nintendo fans would contest this, but ever since the Wii launched in 2006, I think that most mainstream gamers have seen Nintendo consoles as a fun little gizmo to get after you've already decided between PlayStation and Xbox for your primary gaming needs. The difference here is that Sony and Microsoft are about pushing technology to its limits, whereas Nintendo's about making fun, awesome games. And fun, awesome Nintendo games are what we all want as a Nintendo community, but as sales clearly demonstrate, we are vastly outnumbered by the people who prefer the cutting-edge gaming. So, it's true that Nintendo was once an industry leader, but they're definitely not anymore. And that's not to say that they can't be again, but that would mean that they have to try. So I look at this paradigm where we've got creators and consumers who are both prioritizing cutting-edge experiences, and Nintendo's saying, that's not for us. And I just don't see how Nintendo could possibly consider itself part of the big three, as people call it anymore, if that's the case. But when they say, that's not for us, I don't think that they're being stupid. I think that they're being very deliberate. They're saying, we don't want to lead anymore. And that might not be a bad thing, because there's a lot of ridiculous stuff that's making the industry totally unpredictable right now, from VR to mobile to cloud gaming. But at the end of the day, all of this leaves me with two questions. Does Nintendo see itself as an industry leader anymore? And should we as a community consider them an industry leader anymore? I've always kind of thought of them as a leader who rises and falls, but now I'm starting to wonder whether we should consider them like a separate thing entirely. An entertainment company, like they've started to say, who simply influences the gaming industry when they make a good product.
So, Colin, I think a lot of what you've said comes from kind of a maybe missing or incomplete understanding of what Nintendo means when they're saying they don't want to play in the red ocean. What they mean by that is not that they don't want to be market leaders. It's that they think that the market that has been defined by the competing companies in that market is for some reason too narrow or not the market that they want to target.
Sure, but that's what gaming is right now. And I think...
Let me finish.
Okay, sure.
I think it's pretty clear that most of the games being produced right now are not being targeted at the family market. And so I think the market that we're seeing thrive right now on dedicated gaming consoles is the dedicated gamer market. But right. I think what Nintendo is trying to do and wants to do is create or grow the market for those family games, which are being neglected by those platforms. So it's not so much that they don't want to be a leader, it's that they don't want to be a leader in that specific market that's being targeted by developers right now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, but I don't know. I have trouble parsing out that specific market from the gaming industry as a whole, because like, I think that a lot of what Nintendo does with the Wii, and you know, we know they're doing all these QOL things, we know that they're thinking about stuff like mobile games. I wonder if they're starting to see themselves more as a company who makes entertainment, and that entertainment falls under the category of technology and gaming and stuff like that. You know, I know that what they're creating is very much games, but I wonder if it's a little too narrow to consider them a gaming company, because I think that what they're trying to do, you know, in growing and expanding the market, just I feel like it blurs so many lines. And that's why I think that it might be interesting to start considering them an entertainment. I don't know if we should. This is a question for sure. But if they want to grow the gaming market, then they need a product that serves the current gaming market just as well as it does all the new people that they hope to reach. And if they can't do that, if they're only reaching new people, then no matter how many new people they're reaching, then they're still not really directly influencing the dedicated gamers and the dedicated game developers. So I wonder at that point, if their product can only attract new people and not the really hardcore gaming veterans, then are they really leading the gaming industry, or are they doing something else? Or maybe they're leading the entertainment industry by using games. I don't know.
I guess I'll start considering them truly as a general entertainment company when they're pumping equal resources into things like theme parks and IP licensing and movies and such, as they are specifically the video game market. Because right now, it's definitely still their core function and where the majority of their funds and time and energy is going to.
I'd take Ben's point one step further and say it's not just when their investment is bigger in those areas, but when those areas are bringing in more revenue than their games. Because the business, the life of the business is in the money that's being brought in, the people that are buying the products. They have talked about like diversifying and trying to make money in all these different entertainment ventures that they're doing, like theme parks and movies and mobile games even. But every time they talk about those things, they're talking about them as being marketing opportunities for their IP, which will bring people to their games.
Right.
So the signals that they're sending out aren't that they're leaving the gaming industry or that they're not considering themselves a gaming company anymore. It's really that they think that to be successful in gaming, they really need to also be successful in all these other areas too. We haven't seen what this looks like what this would look like yet for a company that's been around as long as Nintendo, who's targeting the market that Nintendo's targeting. So there are a lot of question marks about what the aftermath or what the results will be.
So, but, I mean, I guess then, for the time being, they're just a video game company who sucks at what they do.
I mean, like, I think that's
the only other way I can
clear.
See this.
They had a very strong vision for DS and Wii, and the strong vision aligned with what they thought they were doing for consumers, and it all worked out because the plan was good. And with 3DS and Wii U, it's like, well, 3D technology, that'll get people excited. And we'll put a touchscreen in their controller, that'll get them excited. Like, there was no strategy. There was no market. In mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, they thought they had a market in mind, but there was no real opportunity for either of those things.
And, you know, Nintendo's their hardware sales have really dried up over the past few years, but at the same time, 3DS has still sold, around like 60 million units, I think, which is nowhere near DS, but it's still a pretty respectable amount. And I don't think they can repeat that success again next generation as smartphones and tablets continue to grow, so that I think we'll really sort of see what happens when Nintendo has to, when their hardware market dries up further, they're going to have to sell more home consoles, or if NX is some sort of hybrid, you know, maybe that problem will be alleviated a little bit. But I think we're going to see that handheld market continue to shrink a little bit and give way to mobile games, and then we'll have to see how aggressive Nintendo gets in terms of their mobile strategy, or as, you know, you've been talking about, Colin, expanding into other areas and maybe sort of no longer seeing the video game space as their primary objective.
Well, so part of what I'm considering then, as we talk about whether they're a video game company or an entertainment company, is for now, if they're a video game company, I mean, we know they've obviously done a terrible job at doing that with the Wii U, but if the NX is a console that really focuses on this family market sort of idea, what are they going to do about things like online services like the eShop and Friendlists and Miiverse and stuff? Like, so many of these services that they've built for the Wii U are better on the 3DS, which is, first of all, it's pathetic. Second of all, I mean, this is a console that came out in 2012, it's now 2016, and it's behind consoles that came out in 2006 in terms of things like online infrastructure, which is completely instrumental to the state of the gaming industry right now. So I don't think things like that are going away. I think they're only going to get more advanced. Nintendo has been completely left in the dust in terms of those things, and the way I see it, I don't really know if they can catch up.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if then they're looking at these kinds of failures and saying, well, we can't catch up, so we should sort of refocus our strategy. Maybe this system is focused on family fun, but it's, you know, it's going to be our console and we're going to make games for it, but we're not a player in the dedicated console space the way that Sony and Microsoft are. This is what we're offering the gaming community, but we as a company just have this as our main product right now, but we're looking at all this other stuff. And we don't consider ourselves a gaming company. We just are an entertainment company with a gaming product. And that happens to be our only product right now.
Yeah. There are a few hurdles they have to overcome before they really become relevant again. You were talking about services. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the big ones is that whatever they turn out, it has to be relevant and useful for people. That's a big problem that they had with 3DS and Wii U, where they had features on these consoles, but they weren't relevant features, and they weren't useful features, so they weren't selling points.
Therefore, well, they had a couple issues. They had some features that were trying to play catch-up and completely failing. We've got, like, the eShop interface is bad.
That's what I mean when I say useful,
like,
by the way.
Miiverse is a great idea, but it wasn't implemented well. They had something like Nintendo TV, which was 4 years ahead of its time. People are doing that now, and now it's becoming popularized. But Nintendo had this great idea that they just didn't have enough confidence in. They didn't implement it well, and they didn't push it hard enough in the market, and so it failed. They gave up on it. But they had a brilliant idea. They just didn't execute it well. So we've got this issue that's kind of a double-edged sword.
Yeah, yeah. They need to be able to execute their sort of services at least as well as their competition, and certainly better in some areas, and they haven't. They just haven't done that.
Yeah, and I know I don't pay too close attention to, like, the actual sorts of company organization and new hires and stuff like that, but I haven't heard anything about, like, a really serious investment in hiring new people or just putting a lot of work as a company into building their online infrastructures and stuff like that. I know we've had a lot of, like, eShop maintenance and stuff, but it seems to only be for, like, Wii U and 3DS and their browser infrastructure, which is live now and not that good.
Well,
they did say part of the reason they partnered with DNA was that DNA was going to help them with the online infrastructure on their future hardware.
Yeah, but then look how Miitomo came
out. In addition to DNA, I actually have seen them hire a decent amount of Western talent for things like network services.
That's good.
Nothing really huge. No huge pushes or anything, but certainly it more than nothing.
I do think they need a huge push, though, if they're going to be doing that.
Yeah, they
like, it's better than
they need to catch up by 10 years, essentially.
There need to be no controversies at launch with NX about its online services. Like, I guess that kind of is the sort of ultimate version of what I was kind of originally getting at.
Sure.
But the other two points, and these are both about content, is they need to have, first of all, a bunch of content, which is a problem Wii U had. It doesn't have very much. PS4 and Xbox One, well, PS4 in particular, has a ton of content. And the pattern, the most consistent pattern every generation is that the platform with the most content is the platform that sells the best. And I don't know that we can expect Nintendo to have the most content, but, you know, to use an example, in the PS3 and Xbox eras, they weren't necessarily getting all the hardcore games, but they were getting a pretty big library.
They were getting a lot of shovelware.
They were getting a lot of shovelware, but they were also getting a lot of games that people actually went after.
Right, right. Yeah, you had Just Dance, you had Wii Sports, you had like Galaxy, Smash Bros, Mario Kart.
But it's the same thing with PlayStation 2, same thing with PlayStation, even to some extent the same thing with PS4, except for obviously there are lots more AAA games on PS4.
Yeah.
But quantity of content is important, and also a lot of those games can be games that no one cares about, but you also need to have a lot of games that people care about, and that's another problem that Nintendo has.
Yeah.
So if they can do those things, they don't necessarily need to have all the games that are on PlayStation and Xbox, but they need to have their own games, and they need to be lots of them, and they need to be games that people care about.
Yeah. I'm not worried at all about the games. We've heard a lot about their investment in sort of making sure the launch lineup is solid. When we hear about the ports and stuff, you know, I'm not worried at all. I think they've learned their lesson on that front. The lesson I don't think that they've learned is the online infrastructures, the network services, and just the system OSs. Gaming consoles are not simply you plug in the game, you push power, and the game comes on. Now they have an operating system. They are a machine that is dedicated to much more than just games, and I don't think Nintendo's adapted to that well. You press the home button on Wii U, and it takes like 30 seconds for it to come up sometimes. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know? Like, Alex, we were talking about this the other day. I was trying to just free up enough system memory on the Wii U to download Minecraft. And just because of the load times for navigating the home menu and the system settings menus and all that, the whole interface for data organization is so bad. It took me 2 hours to delete enough content to get Minecraft on there. Minecraft's not even that big. Yeah. And so that's, you know, these are the kinds of problems they're facing. And I just worry that if they haven't been able to fix them now, if they haven't been able to recognize that these are problems, I mean, that's just pathetic. But if they haven't been able to fix them until this point, you know, I just worry that that's going to really sort of be the nail in the coffin for the NX, is that people are going to see these games that are good, but if they don't have the modern gaming infrastructures to support them, then I'm not sure that people will care enough.
Sure.
In order to dig Nintendo out of the hole from Wii U.
Well, you know how it goes. If we talk about it on the show, it'll come true.
Yeah, so I gotta knock on all the wood I can.
Yeah, Nintendo's still got 9 months to put a good OS in this, so let's just keep talking about it every week, and it's gonna have the most amazing OS
ever. Yes, every episode. Nintendo, you can do it. You can make a good OS, you can make good navigation systems.
Hey, Nintendo management, get out of the way of your younger developers, because they seem to have really great ideas. Thanks.
Also true. I feel like we've been on this topic for a long time, though. Does anyone have anything? Yeah. Does anyone else have anything to add before we move on? Or should
let's scoot.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Reggie also said that they won't invest in virtual reality until it hits the mainstream market, and that they only want to implement virtual reality if it can truly enhance gameplay rather than offer the value of sheer spectacle. So that would certainly seem to dispel rumors that we've heard from DigiTimes that the reason NX is launching in 2017, or part of the reason at least, is to add VR support.
Yeah, we had this on our True or Trubbish segment a few weeks ago, and I said it was Trubbish just on the basis that Nintendo has already said they don't plan to sell NX for a launch, which tells me, you know, it's not going to be that expensive of a system, and it's expensive to have good VR. And I said it just didn't make sense for them to sort of do a half measure, just have kind of a gimmicky, crappy support, loose support for VR in some ways. And looks like Reggie and Miyamoto have, you know, similar thoughts. They don't want to just use VR as a gimmick if they're using it.
Yeah.
They want it to be because it's, you know, truly a full experience, and they don't feel that VR is at that point yet.
Yep.
Yep. And I also agree with them.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, a big component of VR, I'd say the most expensive component of VR, is the display technology. And Nintendo's, I hope, learned the lesson that new and interesting display technology is not worth a really, really premium price.
Yeah.
And I hope they stay far, far away from that idea.
And then one last bit of news before I want to go back to some of the subjects we didn't talk about enough from last week. The latest update for Pokken Tournament suggests it's getting Scizor, Darkrai, and Empoleon as DLC fighters. The update data includes lines The update data includes files referencing the three Pokemon, even listing multiple Pokemon moves by name, including Rock Smash, Dark Pulse, and Dark Void. So, if we can assume that this is really happening, and I think it's safe to say that it is, it's awesome that Pokken Tournament is finally getting DLC. You know, Scizor's a great choice, Darkrai's super popular, and Polion seems a little weird compared to some more popular suggestions, but I imagine it would be fun to play as, or else they wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, I have about the same thoughts on those three characters. Scizor is the most exciting to me. I think he's just friggin' fantastic all around, and I love playing as him on Smogon and things like that, so it'd be fun to have him in Pokken. And like you said, Darkrai, he's kind of a badass. Everybody loves him. So
he's like one of the he's 12th most popular in Japan or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
And yeah, Empoleon, I don't know. I don't think anyone really dislikes Empoleon. That seems like sort of a safe pick.
Yeah.
Penguins are cool.
Yeah, right? Who doesn't like penguins?
I'm still waiting for Rotom, and I have a feeling I'll be waiting for a long time. But as soon as he comes to Pokken Tournament, I am in.
Rotom's an assist Pokemon, so I'm afraid you'll have to wait a little longer.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to cry. It's okay. Pokken Tournament, NX, make it happen.
Scizor, I think, is one of the most common suggestions. I remember, a lot of us, and, you know, including, you know, readers and listeners and stuff, were suggesting Scizor when Pokken Tournament was, you know, just a concept that hadn't even come to arcades yet. So that's good. I like that. All right, so let's take it back to some more of the E3 stuff, and let's stick with Pokemon here. Sun and Moon feature a new Battle Royale mode where four players can bring in up to three Pokemon each to fight in a little battle arena. Everyone gets one corner of the ring, and you can both attack and be attacked by any of the three Pokemon in the arena at any given time. Once a player loses all their Pokemon, the match is over, and whichever trainer got the most KOs is declared the winner. It's a little different than our rules that we had the other day, but it's cool nonetheless. I really don't have anything to say on this, but I felt like we breezed over it too quickly last week, so I just wanted to throw it in here in case any of our listeners missed it, or in case you two had thoughts.
I just think it's wild that they keep finding new ways to add new kinds of battles.
Right?
Triple,
I feel like triple battles were
me.
A little contrived.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this is a lot more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, other than that, I have nothing to say about this.
Okay, cool. So next up is Mario Party Star Rush, which none of us realized last week, but it's actually pretty wildly different from the normal formula.
Yeah.
All four players roll the dice and move on the board at the same time, which I think is a pretty neat idea and a really good one for a handheld Mario Party. Where it gets weird is that the main mode isn't a traditional Mario Party. It's called Toad Scramble, where everyone plays a different colored toad on a game board that's more like a grid than a board game. And as you go around the board, you gather characters like Mario and DK as allies, who you can then play as them in minigames, you can use their special abilities on the board, or you can steal them from other players. From what I saw of the minigames, they look a little longer, more fleshed out, which is nice. The game as a whole, it all looks pretty good, but my main concern is that the box art we've seen doesn't have the Nintendo Network logo, so it looks like you won't be able to play online, which that was easily the number one complaint people had with the last 3DS Mario Party, so why?
I guess I personally would never play Mario Party online, but that's just me. It is
weird, but on the other hand, you know, when are four people going to get together and want to play Mario Party on a handheld console anyway?
Well, I questioned the existence of this game in the first place, but I feel like with a board game, especially when with up to four people where you all have to be playing the mini games kind of at the same time, unless you have time to get through an entire game, which is a really long session, I think, especially for a handheld game.
Although with four people rolling and moving at once, this, you know, they speed it up a lot.
Yeah. The way the turns work seems to be better. And I don't know how a game will actually end up playing out because I haven't tried this game yet, obviously, but, going off from my understanding of past Mario Party games, unless you played a really short game, I just don't think it would work very well online anyway.
Sure.
Yeah. So, as much as I love Toad, I'm a little bothered by the whole replacing all the main characters with Toads thing, because, you know, that's what they've done with, the last two Paper Mario games. So, I hope this just doesn't become a thing where Nintendo slowly replaces all of its characters with various colored Toads.
I love Toad. I wouldn't have a problem with that.
Donkey Kong with nothing but Toads. It's Toad.
But Waluigi's where I draw the line.
Could have at least made it Captain Toad Party.
Yeah, right? See, I wouldn't have any complaints if it was a bunch of Captain Toads and Toadettes.
Yeah, well, if, one person plays as Toad, one is Toadette, one is Captain Toad, and one is Toadsworth.
There you go.
There you go. You don't need four-color Toads. Just have different kinds of them.
Toad Party.
Yeah. But, you know, the game itself looks pretty good. The mini games look like a lot of fun. It looks like a great game for what it is, but I'm with you there, Alex. I question the existence of it in the first place.
Yeah, I kind of like the whole grid-based strategy thing in theory, but I, you know, I don't know how much fun it's going to be if I actually try it. Yeah. It's kind of exciting to see them just do something new that isn't let's put all the characters in a car together, but I can't say I'm planning to rush out and buy this.
Right.
But it's called, you know, Star
I'm
Rush.
Excited to try it, but I'm not know, sure right? that I'm actually going to spend $40 for that experience.
Yeah, precisely. Maybe they'll have a demo?
Probably not. Hopefully. The other game is Ever Oasis, Grezzo's little RPG-type game for 3DS. I don't really have anything to say about it beyond the little recap I gave on last week's episode, but given that you guys haven't seen anything of it at this point, now's a good time to talk about it as a group if you guys have any thoughts.
It just kind of, I think you mentioned it last week, but it reminds me a lot of, like, Fantasy Life.
Yeah, I'm...
Just sort of can't decide if it wants to be Animal Crossing or Final Fantasy, so it, you know, is halfway in between.
Yeah, right. For me, it's this, it seems like this weird middle ground between, like, Fantasy Life and, Final Fantasy Explorers, which makes me really glad that it's its own IP and not, like, a spinoff, but, I think it's good that Nintendo is making more of these small IP, I know Pushmo was a pretty good success, so to see them kind of continuing that tradition and more with this new RPG, which is not something you really see them make new IP in very often, that's really encouraging. It feels very much like the kind of game you might have seen on WiiWare last generation, so that's also kind of fun for me. But just looking at the game, it just doesn't look like that. It's that appealing.
Yeah, same. I know it's got an audience, but it's not me.
Yeah, it didn't look like there was a whole lot of depth to it, and in watching some of the dungeon gameplay, it just looked like it would get... I mean, they kept hyping it as, oh, you can switch between characters at will and whatnot, they have special abilities, but as I'm watching it, I'm like, yeah, but this seems a little more like a tedious progression through a dungeon rather than a really cool mechanic of, you know, jumping from character
that,
to character.
Just the way you describe it, the mechanics just now, just doesn't sound like a very good hook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The hook should really be the content, and the content looks, like, okay. Like, it seems like a perfectly passable game, but it also seems like a game I could perfectly pass over.
So our last story for today comes from Game Explain's interview with Risa Tabata, the director of Paper Mario Color Splash. They asked her if the team had considered remastering an old game like The Thousand Year Door, and she asked, astonished, if they would buy it. She said if they hear a lot of people asking for it, they'd have to consider it, which prompts me to ask, who the hell they think they're making this game for in the first place? Like, if we could tell that they weren't listening to their fans, but they don't even seem to know that their fans exist.
This kind of follows on from what I was saying earlier about Nintendo just making a bunch of Mario games all the time and not really caring about them. Or knowing why they should be making them.
Not considering why they're doing it.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, I get the feeling that when they made the first Paper Mario, they had this really great idea for an RPG, and then after they made the first Paper Mario, they're like, oh, well, we have to make sequels to this, because it did pretty well. And then after that, they just no longer had a vision for the franchise.
Well, they tried to shake it up with Super Paper Mario, which was really interesting, and it was a great game.
I really enjoyed Super Paper Mario.
Me too, but it was only good as a deviation. I think that once they strayed away from that path of the original Paper Mario RPGs, they kind of forgot that Paper Mario started as an RPG series, and they just were like, well, where do we go from here?
Yeah.
What new ideas can we try like we tried with Super Paper Mario? But that was a mistake.
Yeah.
On the subject of a remaster, though, I would love to see one now more than ever, and I think I'd love to see the original remastered just as badly as The Thousand Year Door. I mean, Color Splash looks like a mediocre battle system and a mediocre core structure, but it's one of the best-looking games I've ever seen aesthetically. And I would be completely head over heels if they took either of those games with their amazing mechanics and just redid them in HD with all the amazing papercraft stuff that Color Splash does with its environments. I would buy an NX for that alone. If you want launch titles, Nintendo, you know what to do.
Bundle them both. HD remaster, $40, system seller, boom.
There you go. I would buy it. I would buy the 12 million that needs to outpace Wii U. I would go broke in a heartbeat, and I'd never be able to buy games for them again.
Would you sell all your amiibo?
Most of it.
you'll keep Waluigi, though, I'm guessing.
I don't have... That's like $60 on Amazon. I don't know what's going on.
Wow.
I don't have a Waluigi amiibo. Listeners, if any of you got extra Waluigi Amiibos, you know where to send them. All right, well, let's head over to the lightning round. And now we've arrived at the beloved lightning round, where we bring you little nuggets of information from the past week. If you want to read more about any of these stories, or any of the ones we discussed earlier, you can check them out at Gamnesia.com. The latest podcast episode will show up in the scrolling feature bar at the top of the site, and on that page, you will see all these links. All right, so first up, recent releases and stuff that is now available for you. On Wii U, Mighty No. 9 is now available in North America and Asia, although be careful because I've heard reports that it can brick your system. While Minecraft is now available at retail in North America. North America also now has Super Paper Mario available in the eShop, while Drill Dozer is available on the Virtual Console. On 3DS, Kirby Planet Robobot is now available worldwide, Rhythm Heaven Megamix is now available in the 3DS eShop from North America, and Mega Man 7 is now available on the new 3DS Virtual Console.
So get that instead of Mighty No. 9.
Yeah, there you go. And you can now get the Zelda Breath of the Wild themed clothing in Miitomo. Then we've got a bunch of upcoming dates to look out for. June 23rd, three Pokemon Mystery Dungeon games are coming to the Wii U eShop. June 24th, Mighty No. 9 and Terraria's retail version launch on the Wii U in Europe. Mario & Sonic 2016 launches for Wii U worldwide, and Tokyo Mirage Sessions Sharp FE launches in Europe and North America. We've got a review of that live at Gamnesia if you're still deciding whether or not it's worth your time, so go ahead and check it out. Also on June 24th, an international Pokemon tournament kicks off. June 24th is also your last day to get Manaphy through Mystery Gift. Now, June 25th, finally, Sega's holding a party for Sonic's 25th anniversary at Tokyo Joyopolis. June 25th and 26th are the Orlando qualifiers for the Pokken Tournament. June 28th, Terraria launches at retail for Wii U in North America. Zero Escape Zero Time Dilemma launches for 3DS worldwide. And LEGO Star Wars The Force Awakens launches for both platforms worldwide. September 16th, Dragon Quest VII launches on 3DS in North America and Europe. That's the 17th for Australia. October 7th, Paper Mario Color Splash launches worldwide. And October 21st, Rhythm Heaven Megamix launches on the eShop and at retail in Europe. Then finally, a rundown of all the smaller things that happened this past week. Breath of the Wild was social media's most discussed game of E3, and it had more organic online searches than any other game of the show.
This kind of flies in the face of something we hear Nintendo say all the time, which is that they don't necessarily listen to what people want, and they try to do their own thing. This kind of seems to suggest that maybe they should listen to what people want, and maybe do it every once in a while.
Who'd have thought? Capcom says the great Ace Attorney can't be localized now due to certain circumstances. Hideki Kamiya wants to make a third Bayonetta, and he's got ideas for Okami 2. Over 100 employees from Monolith Soft, the Xenoblade developers, are working on Zelda Breath of the
Wild. Continuing the trend where 90% of what I hear about this game is wish fulfillment.
Breath of the Wild's ancient language translates into English, and people have already decoded it. The arrow from Breath of the Wild's reveal trailer is important for navigating the game. In fact, there's an excellent editorial at Gamnesia explaining why Breath of the Wild could feature time travel, not unlike Ocarina of Time's, and maybe these arrows are the key. Aonuma wants to make more Zelda games like Breath of the Wild and others with totally new styles.
To kind of call back to what I said earlier about spin-offs, I do hope that this doesn't mean that the main Zelda series will continue to be really fragmented, because, like I've said before, Breath of the Wild has established a really good standard, and I'd love for them to keep that going.
Yeah. And Aonuma says that Skyward Sword HD is definitely possible. You can now pre-order the gorgeous figurine of Pokemon Trainer Red and his Pikachu. Fire Emblem Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn are both getting art books in Japan. Nintendo's VP Scott Moffitt says, "Get a Wii U while you can," as production shifts to NX. You can explore Nintendo's amazing Breath of the Wild E3 booth with some new footage. And finally, Simisear placed dead last in Japan's most popular Pokemon contest, so they are distributing a Simisear alongside Greninja to commemorate its crushing loss. So everybody, thank you all so much for listening. This is the Endo Nintendo Week for today. If we didn't cover a subject that really grabbed you from the past week, or there's something you want to hear us talk about, please let us know. You can email me at colin@gamnesia.com, that's C-O-L-I-N at G-A-M-N-E-S-I-A, or you can find me on Twitter at Colin McIsaac, that's C-O-L-I-N-M-C-I-S-A-A-C. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or subscribe to us on YouTube at Gamnesia TV for bite-sized discussions from the show. And please head to iTunes to leave us a review. We're really working hard to make this show great for you guys, so those iTunes reviews really mean a lot. And they also help a lot of listeners discover the show. So if you haven't done that, please do. Spread the love. It's greatly appreciated. We're hoping to make our way to 70. We're in the mid-60s right now, so keep those reviews coming. If you have feedback for Nintendo Week, please send it to colin@gamnesia.com, or you can find me on Twitter at Colin McIsaac. And remember to send in your questions about Nintendo, about our show. We love engaging with you guys, and we read them and talk about them here on the show, so it's a great way to get involved. Again, that's colin@gamnesia.com and at Colin McIsaac. And Alex, where can they find you?
You can also find me on Twitter at Legend of Lex.
If you can't wait till next week for more of our stuff, you can head to Gamnesia.com to see more gaming news as it happens. We got Sony, Microsoft, Indie, you name it, and even Nintendo news that we didn't have the time to discuss on this week's show. On our way out, please enjoy an incredible orchestral suite celebrating The Legend of Zelda, arranged by Jeremiah Sun. Thank you all so much for listening, and we hope you have another great week.
I find it funny that Colin was talking about inventions past 1980 because Colin was invented past 1980.